The customs man. Remember him? He was the chap, or occasionally the young lady, who used to board your boat with a leather briefcase when you came home from France with a half-empty bottle of Calvados, a few units of non-fortified wine, and a crumpled pack of Old Holborn over your tiny limit. South Coast mariners who predate today's soft EU border policies will recall the homely fun of the battle with HM's representatives as, one and all, we became contrabandistas trying to outsmart the revenue men. Excess liquor? Moi! We'd explain in wide-eyed innocence as our hearts accelerated to warp speed. And when our interrogators leaned back and said, "If you'd just open that locker, sir," we could almost hear the cell door slamming shut. What most of us failed to understand was that these lawmen were only playing with us. They'd far rather have been at home in bed than inspecting our yachts at 0300 in some Hamble River mud berth. They knew we didn't constitute a risk to national security or a compromise to Her Majesty's war chest, but we'd had to fill in forms when we left Blighty, and they were obliged to gather up the carbon copies when we returned. This snowfall of apparently useless paperwork did serve the purpose of putting a preventive officer onto our boats for what was called a bit of a chat, and these stern but straightforward officials were far more effective than the heavies who occasionally appeared in their stead. Armed enforcement platoons have a solid grounding in the history of our foreshore. Take Black Gang Chine, for instance. This notch in the soft rock of the Isle of Wight, now the haunt of plastic dinosaurs and tourists, was named in honour of the revenue squad that patrolled the beaches to ambush serious smugglers. In the days of brandy for the parson and baccy for the clerk, when children watched the wall while the gentlemen rode by, the Black Gang were the hard men of the customs service. Pitched battles were fought here, with murder on the sands, and judicial equivalent on many a wayside gallows. My own get-togethers with the Black Gang of the 1980s seemed to imply that they wished nothing had changed. I was sailing an ancient 50-foot working boat with my wife, my preschool daughter, and various shipmates. On the first occasion, we were boarded by a team with a sniffer dog. The beast charged around the boat, uncovering nothing, while the investigators grilled us about how we got our kicks. It must be said that in those days I had rather long hair, but appearances can and should be deceptive. Whatever they were looking for, they had the wrong guy. When, in the absence of any concrete evidence of addictions or dealerships, they asked me if we'd mind hiding a small stash to train the dog, I should have had them sign a note to assure any interested magistrates that the stuff was their own. I didn't, and I tremble to think of the consequences had they been bent. Well, I'm pleased to report that they weren't. The pooch dutifully rootled out the package, and they all sloped off home. My second call from the Black Gang also involved a sniffer. This time, my crew were tumbling over the port rail into the dinghy with their bags as the lady dog handler and her associates stamped over the starboard bulwarks. Ignoring any goods that might have been going ashore, these professionals once again subjected my yacht to an in-depth rummage. The dog, an enthusiastic spaniel, scratched the wife's fresh varnish wherever it scrabbled its paws, and no apology was forthcoming. The others were unhelpful when I inquired what it was they were searching for, and by the time the mutt had reached the foot of the companionway I was feeling distinctly anti-establishment. Retribution was at hand, however. What neither the innocent animal nor its hard-faced supervisor realized was that we'd just completed a high-latitude voyage for which we'd shipped half a ton of coal for our stove. This had been stowed abaft the companion ladder. When the dog came panting from this deep hole, it was covered in black dust, which it transferred liberally to its trainer's whiter-than-white shirt. As they left, without so much as a sorry for your trouble, my wife's expression would have done credit to the Mona Lisa. So badly had this gang misjudged us that they created an atmosphere of distrust that took years to put right. I understood they had a job to do, but as a free-born Englishman, I'd imagined myself innocent until proven guilty. My conclusion was, if this was how a patriotic family were treated by the guardians of our freedom, I wouldn't go looking for them the next time I saw something dubious on the waterfront. What a difference from the world-weary customs men of my youth who missed nothing, but we always suspected, saw the joke. Fortunately, time is a great healer. As we're regularly told, we now have a major border issue. There's also no doubt that many of the goods creeping under the radar are far nastier than a cask of cognac. To deal with these dangers, we don't need new government-imposed paperwork or electronic sign-in, sign-out systems. I saw enough of this sort of approach on a trip to Soviet Russia years ago. Our first line of defence must be well-trained customs people, able to talk without prejudice with intelligent water users who pose no threat, and I for one would welcome such people aboard. Any of these officers is worth 100 computers, so let's have more of them, please. They don't have to trouble us about our half-full bottles anymore. They're free to do their real job, and we're all on the same side.